welcome everybody to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Eric Horn in the Oklahoman studios in Oklahoma City, and I'm on the phone with the Athletic's John Krasinski, one of the finest NBA reporters I think we have on the circuit. And John's joining us from Minneapolis today. Is that correct, John?
That is right. I'm here home in Minnesota where the snow has not yet started to fall. So appreciate the kind introduction there.
Well, I always tell people all the time that Minneapolis is one of my favorite NBA cities, and it might be my favorite. And people always give me this weird kind of response, and they're like, and I tell people all the time, like, I would move to Minneapolis. I would totally live there. And they're like, but it snows. I'm like, but y'all, like, there's extreme weather in every place on earth. Like, it's hot here in Oklahoma City. It's hot in Miami. There's basically, like, only a few cities on earth, I mean, or in the United States that has NBA teams where you're going to get ideal weather. And that would probably be places like San Francisco where it's just going to be absurdly expensive to live. So I always put Minneapolis in, like, my top five.
Yeah, you know, I think I hear that a lot. I mean, I'm a native from here, as everyone will be able to tell from my accent. But, you know, people have this picture of Minneapolis as Hoth from Star Wars, you know, this like frozen outpost that there is, you know, there's no culture, there's nothing going on here, it's just cold all the time. But then they get here, and if they spend even 2 or 3 days here, you walk around the city, even when it's cold out, they have skyways and things to keep you warm, and there's theater, there's sports, there's music, there's all sorts of great stuff to do here. It does not, you know, cost $3 million for a 900-square-foot apartment. So there's a lot of things that we have going for it. It's just that you have to kind of come here to see it. And to be honest, Eric, I'm okay with the way that it is, because if we had everyone coming here, then it'd be like Los Angeles, and, you know, there'd be too much riffraff to deal with. So I'm good with where we're at right now.
Exactly. John, if you could just humor our listeners a little bit with your background. You know, you had a long career with the AP. I remember your byline when I was just getting into the business and before I even started covering the Thunder, and you were just all things, you know, Minneapolis and not Minneapolis, but Minnesota. If you could just give some people a little bit of an idea of what you do and it's been like for you, you know, covering Minnesota sports, in your career.
Yeah, it's been a nice ride. I started, I went to school here at a little Division III college in St. Paul called St. Thomas, and went to journalism school there. Started at a very low level at the AP in Minneapolis in 2001. Sort of bounced my way around the company a little bit. I worked in Alabama for a little while. I worked in Indianapolis for 2 years, covered the Pacers brawl and all that stuff. There, and then I came back to Minneapolis in 2005 for to cover sports here full time. And yeah, I had, you know, the Twins, the Vikings, the Wild, the Gophers, the Wolves, all on my plate, and kind of did the gamut there for 14 years or so, and then 2 years ago joined the Athletic with a great staff that we have here, and now I concentrate mostly on the Wolves and the Vikings. But covering sports in this town is an exercise in covering heartbreak. These are teams that don't often win the big one, or the Lynx have won a bunch of WNBA titles, but none of the men's teams have won a title since 1991. So the sports fans kind of are suffering here quite a bit with, you know, certainly the mediocrity of the Wolves. The Vikings have good teams, but always get right to the doorstep and then stub their toes. And so it's been an interesting run to cover all these teams and all these sports here, because there's a fatalism in the minds of Minnesota sports fans just waiting for the gut punch to come, and it usually does.
And that's kind of a perfect segue. And by the way, for people who don't know, John is going to be the first of, you know, a few guests that I'm going to have from Northwest Division teams, all the teams that, you know, the Thunder's going to be playing four times a year, whether it's the Timberwolves, the Jazz, the Nuggets, or the final one, which I can't think of off the top of my head. That's it. Timberwolves, Jazz, Nuggets. Who's the Blazers. Other Northwest team? The Blazers, Portland. Oh, yes. Why do I always forget about the Blazers? But it was kind of an appropriate segue. You were just talking about kind of the heartbreak of Minnesota sports. I wrote a story earlier in the summer. I think it was a little bit after the Thunder's big trades of Russell Westbrook and Paul George. And it kind of talked a little bit about the perspective of things. And, a lot of fans don't want to hear the whole concept of, you had a good 10-year run of sustained success.
Yeah.
That's something that the Thunder really likes to beat home, because they've kind of got this Spurs model. And Sam Presti believes that this thing is kind of like a long-term investment kind of stock portfolio, which is kind of counter to how teams go now. You really have a smaller window as an NBA team than you used to. You're not going to run this thing for a decade like the Lakers and the Celtics did anymore. At the most, you get a Warriors-like run where you get maybe 4 or 5 years. But, I was going through all the teams of the past decade in the NBA, all 30 teams, and looking at how many teams, had 45 wins or more in the last decade. And I kind of use that 45 win mark as just kind of a measure of, just kind of like a baseline. And I think the Spurs and the Thunder were the only two teams that had won 45 games or more every year for the past 10 years. Do you want to guess how many times Minnesota's won 45 games or more in the past 10 years, John?
Just one time, I think, right?
That's correct. Just one time. It was the Jimmy Butler year.
Yep. Absolutely. No, it's been a long slog here. The one thing that people don't understand about the Twin Cities and Minnesota in general is everyone looks at it as the hockey mecca, right? And that's true. I mean, there's a ton of hockey fans here. It's a very, very big deal here. People really get into it. But what people outside of this community, and even some people in the hockey community inside here, don't acknowledge that is absolutely true, is there are more basketball fans in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities, than there are hockey fans. But they have just been bludgeoned over the head by dysfunction and terrible teams and every sort of bad luck, bad decisions that could befall a franchise, not just for a couple of years, but for 15 years. I mean, they went to the Western Conference Finals in 2004, and they've had just one playoff appearance since then. And then they finally get that playoff appearance, and then the whole team just disintegrates right in front of it when Jimmy Butler requested the trade. So they have really taken just haymaker after haymaker, and that's why the Wolves are in such an uphill battle to kind of climb into relevance in this market, just because they've been so bad for so long. It's hard to be that bad. It's you should not ever go 10, 12, 14 years without a playoff appearance in the NBA. I mean, geez, eight teams get in for each conference. It shouldn't be that difficult, but the Wolves have just had a staggering amount of ineptitude that has sort of worn this fan base down. If they ever were able to sustain two or three really good years, this franchise would look entirely different and would be at an entirely different place, but they just haven't been able to do it.
Yeah, and it's like, I think it's tough sometimes for people who, follow a team like the Thunder or, a team that's really only had one bad year to kind of have that perspective and step away from it and say, it's really a charmed life you've led for 10 or 11 years, being able to watch, guys like Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and James Harden, be really good and never really have a drop off unless it was injury related. And, I remember when, I was a kid and Kevin Garnett was kind of toiling and as his focal point. And I think we tend to forget, the more we get removed from it, how awesome he was and how central he was to everything they did. This was a guy that was a big man, handing out 5.5 assists a game. Everything ran through this guy. And the same thing happened when, Kevin Love kind of, carried that torch or took the torch from him. but it was a singular guy. And it's not to knock the guys who are around him, the Troy Hudsons and the Sam Cassells and guys like that, but there was never enough for those guys to put together a composite. It was more so just a focal point guy. And I guess that leads into what the next topic is, you know, the Timberwolves, there aren't a lot of expectations for them this season, but you've got a couple of guys. Obviously, you got a guy in Karl Anthony Towns who is one of the best in the league. He's an absolute monster. But you got a guy in Andrew Wiggins who you wrote about today that they need something more from him in order for them to get anywhere close to out of the cellar that they're going to be in the Western Conference, because the Western Conference is so deep that it can't be this one-man thing anymore. You can't have just one star. And you got to have at least two guys to be able to make a dent in the Western Conference. And Andrew Wiggins has got to be that guy in some way, shape, or form because of, you know, not just his ability, but the amount of money they've invested in him. You know, I think he's got $121 million left on his deal. I mean, you've been there, you know, for every year of his career. What do you see and what do you project from him, you know, going into this season?
Yeah, it's hard, Eric, to know what you're going to get from him. If they played the Thunder every game,
yeah,
he would be
the
a
thing.
Hall of Famer, right?
I think that's why Thunder fans think that Andrew Wiggins and it's not really as there isn't like 100% approval rating here for Andrew Wiggins. My colleague Barry Trammell kind of raised the question that like the Thunder should trade for Andrew Wiggins, and he got roasted on High Noon and all the ESPN programs because they're like, Andrew Wiggins stinks, he blows.
Yeah,
but yeah, every time Andrew Wiggins comes to Oklahoma City, he torches them. I think he averaged like 28 points a game against them last year or something, and
he dropped 40 right after they had the coaching change. Yeah, it's there are a few of those teams, Eric, where he just brings it all the time. But Oklahoma City, for whatever reason, I have no idea. Toronto, obviously he's from there. Cleveland, because they traded him. And then LA, because I think he likes the bright lights out there. So yeah, he usually plays well against those teams. And then with the rest of them, it's super underwhelming. And that's the most maddening thing about Andrew Wiggins, is that he is not a bust in the traditional sense of, you know, Anthony Bennett was a bust as a number one overall pick. Darko Milicic, excuse me, was a bust because they just came in and they didn't play and they didn't have the careers that anything that was even remotely associated with them when they were coming out in the draft. Andrew Wiggins has had monster games, like a lot of them. I think he's topped 40 points in a game 7 times. He won the Rookie of the Year hands down. He averaged like 24 points a game the year before he signed that big contract extension. So he has shown the ability, when he is locked in and focused and playing well, to be a difference maker, to be the kind of player that not even a Paul George could stop last year in Oklahoma City when he was putting 40 on him. But then they go through way too many stretches where you can't even notice him on the court, where he just kind of floats back and forth. He doesn't play great defense. He settles for the mid-range jumper. He doesn't get to the line. He doesn't use all of that athleticism to his advantage. And so every coach who has been with him, including at Kansas, has been trying to unlock a more consistent Andrew Wiggins, and they just haven't been able to. And so there's a lot of this going into this season where there's a lot of talk about the Timberwolves trying to hold him more accountable, where, okay, if you're not doing it tonight, Andrew, they have a lot more wings, and so maybe they put him on the bench for longer stretches, or maybe they try and hold him a little bit more accountable that way and see if that kind of drives him at all, because they've tried a ton of different approaches and none of it has elicited the breakthrough season that they absolutely need. Because you're right, he's making max money. And if he, you know, if they don't get even, you know, borderline all-star production from him, they have no chance in the West. So it's just, he's an enigma. that nobody really knows what to expect from, but everyone has twisted themselves in knots trying to reach him.
Well, what effect do you think the Jimmy Butler situation had on Wiggins? Because, you know, obviously Butler comes in and he's the alpha. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who's basically, you know, I don't want to go as far as, well, yeah, that's appropriate. He's essentially emasculating these guys and saying, like, get on my level. Mm-hmm. Do you think that was a detriment to him as a player? You know, because you mentioned he's coming off of a season where he averaged a career high in points. And then he goes down to 17.7 from the 24. And, you know, some of that's a product of giving touches to Jimmy. But what effect do you think that had on his development, having a Jimmy Butler come in? Because they did make the playoffs too. They were a good team who, you know, beat the Thunder in some close games. And I thought was a better team than the Thunder in the year where the Thunder had Carmelo Anthony. But what effect do you think the Jimmy Butler situation had on Wiggins and his development?
Yeah, I do think that it did have an adverse effect, or it stunted things a little bit. That said, Eric, I can't blame them for going and getting Jimmy Butler. Yeah. Jimmy is just a better player than Andrew Wiggins, and it clearly did. They had, you know, before he got hurt that season, they were third in the West. And so they were winning a lot of games. They were having success. It just was not a good fit from a culture chemistry standpoint. So the problem isn't that that they went and got Jimmy Butler. The problem is that Jimmy Butler blew things up from inside after they went and got him. And so Andrew had to kind of look at it and say, this is the guy that you're bringing in, the one who's just going to quit after one season on us, and that's who you're hitching your wagon to. And so I think there was a little bit of disillusionment there. I don't think he had a problem with Jimmy personally, but I do think that he, rather than kind of, you know, we've seen this a lot, right, where the third wheel has it the toughest, you know, with Chris Bosh in Miami.
Carmelo,
you
know, Anthony here. Yeah.
Carmelo Anthony there, Kevin Love in Cleveland. You don't get as many touches. A lot of times you're pushed to the perimeter, pushed off to the side. And that's what happened with Wiggins. Butler was number one, Towns was number two, and Wiggins kind of was pushed off to the side, and he, rather than try and be assertive and really force his way back into things a little bit more, he just went into a turtle shell. And I think that affected his mentality, where he just wasn't attacking the rim anymore. He wasn't dunking at all. You know, and I asked him about it sort of about a month after the Butler trade, when he had a big dunk in a game. I just said, you know, Andrew, you don't dunk anymore. Where is that? And he said to me that, you know, when Jimmy was here, he was kind of looked at himself as more of this kind of guy who was pushed to the corner, and he lost some of his aggressiveness and he needed to get that back. So yeah, I do think that it affected him that way. But I don't think I can blame Jimmy for that or Tibbs for that, because I think they got a really good player that they hoped was going to challenge these guys and get them to raise up. And instead, with Wiggins in particular, they just got him to kind of, you know, just say, you know, they don't need me. I'm just going to stand over here in the corner and not do anything.
John, one of the interesting questions around here, when it comes to the Thunder's roster, is the future of Chris Paul and mm-hmm. guys like Danilo Gallinari. The Thunder, I don't know if you paid attention to this, but Sam Presti's kind of made it his mission to not use the word rebuild as he's gone through this summer. He's used the words replenish and reposition. And there's always a strategy behind the rhetoric that the Thunder uses in those public situations. So I don't think they're in a rush necessarily to tear this entire thing down, but it was clear this summer that Chris Paul didn't want to be here from the onset. They tried to move him. It didn't work. You know, a quarter of the league, or more than a quarter of the league, was in free agency this summer, which means, you know, December 15th, things are going to open up in terms of being able to move guys to different places. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, and multiple people have discussed this on different podcasts or different mediums, but I think Minnesota has an interesting situation where you have Jeff Teague that's going to be on an expiring. You've got some guys maybe like Gorgui Dieng that need to be moved. where do you think Minnesota stands in terms of who they might want to move? I know you mentioned in your piece today that Andrew Wiggins was the guy that they weren't considering moving. Do you think that Chris Paul would be a viable option for them? Or do you think that that's something that they're not considering, or they wouldn't consider when it got to that point?
Yeah, you know, I know especially Bill Simmons has been a big proponent of the Wolves going after Chris Paul.
Yeah, to kind of maximize Cat.
Yeah, and that has certainly gained a lot of steam because he has a big megaphone and he's a sharp NBA guy and all these things. And so I've gotten a lot of questions about that from fans over the summer about, you know, is Chris Paul a possibility for them and a possible target? And so far, all the indications I have is that he is not. Even, you know, there was even when Russell first became available, Russell Westbrook became available too, I was told internally that they viewed Westbrook as, you know, not on Cat's timeline in terms of where they are in their career arcs. They want to get younger players who will grow with Towns, not who are sort of at the apex or over or past their apex, maybe in Chris Paul's case a little bit. I think that he would fit in from a playmaking standpoint, from a need standpoint. Point guard, I think, is their biggest need right now. But they went hard after D'Angelo Russell in free agency. They were hoping they were going to get him. They got, you know, the rug pulled out from under them by the Warriors at the last minute. But they wanted him because he's another 23-year-old that they think could grow with Towns for the next few years. And then, you know, in 2 years from now, when they're both sort of going into their primes and maybe some of these other teams are falling back, their Wolves are ready to make their move. So with Chris Paul and with Russell Westbrook both, I think that the Wolves view them as sort of more advanced age than they want for that position. That's, you know, they tried to bring in Jimmy Butler, a player who had the, you know, who was really impatient to win right away and get going. And that didn't work with some of the younger guys. And so I don't think that they're going to be pursuing Chris Paul when that becomes available.
John, we're going to jump right into it. I know you can't stick around very long, but I gave you a little bit of homework. I wanted to go through the Northwest Division, just kind of where you think this is going to fall. And maybe if we have a little bit of time, we can go through the Western Conference as a whole. But I just wanted to start with the number five team. And I think that this is completely conditional between the Thunder and Minnesota as to whether or not Chris Paul is going to be on the team. Because I think if Chris Paul is on the team, the Thunder is going to be better than Minnesota. But as of now, today, just going into it with the rosters set as they are, I actually like the Minnesota's starting five. At full strength, I think I actually like it better than the Thunder's, but I like the Thunder's bench a little bit better than Minnesota's. So I'm going to go ahead and put Minnesota at five and then the Thunder at four.
Yeah, I agree with that right now. I mean, the way that when you look at who the Wolves lost in the offseason, Taj Gibson, Derrick Rose, Tyus Jones, Anthony Tolliver, they lost, you know, veteran guys who were really good and dependable. And they brought in guys who are more on prove it types of situations, Jake Lehman, Noah Vonleh, Jordan Bell, Shabazz Napier, who, you know, don't have the same pedigree and profile that the guys they lost did. So there's a chance that they took a step back from a talent standpoint while so many other teams in the West and certainly in this division got a lot better. And so I think it's only fair to put them at five. What they hope is that the kind of renewed chemistry and culture that Gerson Rosas and Ryan Saunders are implementing, the new system that they're putting in defensively and offensively, is going to fit better, and that the sum will be greater than the whole of its part, or the whole will be greater than the sum of its parts, and so that they can surprise and move up. But yes, as of today, I think that you really do have to put the Wolves at five and the Thunder at four. Because I do think also, Eric, I think people are looking past Gallo a little bit too. He's a really good player.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're discounting how good he really is. Now, obviously, yeah, if you trade Chris Paul in the middle of the season, that changes everything. But I really like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and I really like Danilo Gallinari. Those are two really, really good wingmen for Chris Paul to be dealing with. And if he does stay, yeah, I think they have the better roster than the Wolves right now.
Yeah, I think Gallinari, even if he doesn't reach the heights that he did last year, he shot like 43.3% from three. I don't think he's going to be able to duplicate that. He's a 37% career three-point shooter. But if he gets anywhere around 39 or 40%, I think that's going to be – I mean, that's a big upgrade because the Thunder just didn't have enough shooting last year. So I think Gallinari is going to be a good player for them. And I think that – and this is a big if. You know, if you get a healthy Andre Robertson, that could help you a ton.
Right.
I just need to wait and see on that because I think there are a lot of people around the league who are just saying, oh, they're getting Andre Robertson back. Yeah, but we haven't seen him in a year and a half, 2 years. He's not going to be 100% when he comes back from that injury. So right now I'm really not even factoring in the Robertson into the equation, but I am factoring in Dennis Schroeder, a guy like Terrence Ferguson who's going to make another leap. I think that guys like Hamidou Diallo are going to be better. I think that Darius Bazley, the rookie that they drafted, is going to get an opportunity. He's a guy who's 6'9" and can handle the ball a little bit. I do like the depth of the Thunder. And, we've hardly talked about it in the offseason, but Nerlens Noel's coming back, who was a defensive anchor for them in the second unit. And then you add Mike Muscala, who can stretch the floor at the 5 and the 4. So I think their depth is better than Minnesota's right now because Minnesota lost some key guys. You know, Taj Gibson's a rock. And just having that guy around in Oklahoma City – you could see how important he was when they acquired him at the deadline. Tyus Jones is a really good young player, and then Anthony Tolliver I thought was a guy that the Thunder should have actually went after in free agency. Mm-hmm. He ends up signing with Portland, and then we'll get to Portland. I think that's the number three team.
I agree.
I think we're going to be chalk here. But, yeah, Portland is probably going to be the three in the division just based on what they lost. But still having enough firepower with Dame and CJ. But it's going to be tough to replace guys like Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu who could guard multiple positions. I think they're going to take a step back defensively. But they're still going to be able to score. And then it depends on what they get from Whiteside while Nurkic is still coming back from his injury.
Yep, I think so too, Eric. I mean, I love Dame and CJ, but I do want to see if they lost some versatility when you lose, you know, the guys that they did with Harkless and Aminu. Like, I think those are big losses. And it's a team that has at times played good, really well defensively, and then at other times hasn't over the last few years. And so to lose some of those linchpins. It'll be interesting. The one guy I'm interested, really want to see how he comes along is Anthony Simons.
Yeah, absolutely.
For them, because everyone out there just raves about him and thinks that he's really going to be an impact player. And if that happens, that changes things for them. But the other thing that we get to here, Eric, is like, I think this is a really good division. And
yeah, it's loaded.
So you can have a great season like Portland. You know, last year Utah won 50 games and finished third. Like Portland could win 51 or 52 and finish third still in this division. I just think that's how competitive it is.
Yeah, I mean, you got four playoff teams from this division last year, and mm-hmm. you know, four teams that were essentially 51 teams. The Thunder was 49, mm-hmm. but it's just become just wildly competitive in the last couple of years, especially since Denver's made a jump. It's a tough division, and even the Thunder and Minnesota aren't going to be teams that these other teams are going to be able to walk over night to night.
Right, exactly.
Because, frankly, Minnesota hasn't been a team that teams have been able to walk over in the past couple of years. That gets you to Utah, and I'm going to give Utah the benefit of the doubt because they made some strong acquisitions in the offseason. But, every year we say this is Utah's time. This is Utah's time to make the leap or whatever. And while they've clearly made better acquisitions this offseason than they did from the previous one, the Conley move is going to help Donovan Mitchell so much, and just giving him some help in terms of the ball handling duties. And Conley's an upgrade over over Ricky Rubio. And then Bogdanovich is a good shooter and defender at his position. You know, adding some peripheral parts like Jeff Green and then Moutier, those guys are solid veterans. You want to pick Utah to be in that top three range in terms of the Western Conference, but again, that's one of those teams I want to see it happen. I want to see Utah do it first before I say that they're going to be better than a Denver or I went back and forth with Utah and Houston as to where I put them. I think I put the Jazz slightly above Houston when I was doing the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for this division, I think that they're clearly behind Denver, but they're solidly ahead of Portland as of now.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I do think that Utah is poised for a great year as long as Conley stays healthy. He has had some injuries in the past couple of years with Memphis. But I think being in number two behind Denver is no slouch because I have to think a little bit more on it, Eric, but right now I think Denver might be my number one seed in the West only because – like you look at maybe the Clippers with Paul George, maybe won't be healthy right at the start, and they'll probably rest Kawhi some during the season. A lot of other teams will be on load management situations where I think Denver will go balls to the wall to try and win that top seed. And they have been together for a while now. They have continuity. They are not going to go through the same growing pains that Utah will because of the new faces. And so I just think that they're poised to really have – the Nuggets are really poised to have a great, great season. And so, you know, Jeremy Evans I think is a really good pickup for them. And I like their coaching staff. I like the way the pieces fit together. And so I do have Denver number one. But I think that Utah can be right there neck and neck with them. And I think both of them can be in the top three – or four in the West, depending on how kind of that load management situation shakes out with a few of the other teams.
Yeah, Denver's the one for me, and they're the one in the West too. Just a combination of depth and youth, and I think there's going to be a hunger for them in terms of, you know, Golden State's taking a step back. They see the opportunity. The way that they went out to Portland in the second round, I think that that's just all the incentive for Denver to be a team that's going to push, you know, for 60 wins or I think at the least 55. They're just built for it. And we've seen over the past few years, I mean, I remember when, you know, Kevin Durant's last year here, those were three-quarter games against Denver. They were putting those guys away early, but those younger guys were seeing that and absorbing that. And in the last few years, similar to a way that I think that Minnesota was absorbing those losses to the Thunder when Wiggins was there, Young and Cat, and then Durant was, you know, playing just unbelievable ball against those guys. I think that you learn from that. You come back the next year, you get better. I think Denver's gotten better through some of the tough stuff that they've had to go through, whether it's Russell Westbrook putting them out on that last second shot, putting them out of the chance to go to the playoffs, you know, losing out on a playoff spot in the year that, you know, the Timberwolves had Jimmy Butler, basically on the last week of the season, losing out on that playoff spot, and then coming back last year and losing the way that they did to Portland. I think that there's a kind of a natural progression for Denver to be the team that takes that jump. And I agree. I think they're going to finish ahead of the Clippers just based on how the Clippers are going to manage the season and Paul George's injury situation. But it's time for Denver to – this is their opportunity. And I think that they can be a team that can be one of the few handful of teams that could be an NBA champion this year.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's going to be – I think it's going to be a fun, just fun season overall because I do think it's fairly wide open for the first time in a long time. But – I think that they definitely learned from their experiences in the playoffs last year. I think that will help them going forward. I think, you know, having such a unique player like Jokic kind of leading the way for them the way that they do, but then all the pieces around him just fit. Gary Harris, you know, Jamal Murray, I mean, you know, Will Barton, all these guys, Monty Morris, they've done a great job of drafting. They've done a great job of identifying talent to go get. I like everything about the way that they've built it. And so, yeah, this is a year that You know, you see it. You could be Western Conference Finals. It could be NBA Finals for them. That seems like, you know, the next step for them is doing that. And I think Mike Malone and that coaching staff does a great job of keeping them hungry and making sure they stay focused on those types of things. So it's going to be a fun year for sure to watch just across the league. But I definitely have my eye on the Nuggets as a team that can come up and win that whole or at least get to the finals.
Yeah, for sure. John, I know it took a lot of your time today, man, but thanks for coming on with me. I appreciate it. I have one more question before you leave.
Yeah.
Is there ever any confusion with the offices, John Krasinski?
There is all the time, Eric. It's funny, like whenever he has a movie that comes out now, I get a bunch of tweets from people who just kind of type in John KR, you know, and if they spell his first name, you know, JON instead of JOHN or something, the tweets come my way. Say, hey, I loved you in this. Hey, you know, you were great in this. And I always kind of tongue in cheek reply to them and, you know, say, hey, thanks. You know, my team worked really hard on it or something like that. And I try to have fun with it, but it happens all the time. You know, I get, you know, all the time get questions about, you know, sometimes, you know, hey, aren't you that guy in the office or, you know, that kind of stuff. So for a long, long time, I was the only John Krasinski that I knew. Now I'm not even close to the most famous one. So it's been quite a ride that way for sure.
Well, yeah, you should do a podcast with him. You guys should team up, and you know, maybe he can get some followers because people are like, oh, he knows the Athletic's John Krasinski. Yeah, no, I'll follow.
That's what
him
I now. Wonder. I wonder if whenever I break a story, if he gets a bunch of questions about, you know, where Jimmy Butler's going to go on Twitter or something like that. I he probably doesn't, but I would love to one day meet him and have the two worlds collide. That'd be great.
Got
to
get a picture together for sure.
For sure. Yep.
John, thanks for joining me, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Eric. I really appreciate it. Look forward to catching up with you when you guys come through town.
Thanks. And thanks to everyone for listening to the Thunder Buddies podcast. Subscribe, listen, share on Apple Podcasts, and we will see you next week with another dip into the Northwest Division and a look at the season to come. Thanks.